From RN's creative audio unit, this is the Radiotonic Podcast. I'm Jesse Cox. Today we head across the Tasman, where dozens of tiny libraries dot the countryside of New Zealand. Often no bigger than a bedroom or garage, these freestanding buildings are stocked with shelves of donated books, official documents, and vintage literature. You won't find a computer or e-book in sight. Open just a few hours a day, a month, or simply by request, the tiny libraries and their devoted caretakers attract regular borrowers, eager volunteers, and curious travellers. Our own in-house library enthusiasts, Julie Shapiro and Miyuki Okiranta, drove around New Zealand in search of the people, books, and stories behind these humble structures.
Have you remembered to pay your annual subscription? Only $5 for 12 months of reading pleasure, a bargain. Check your current status with our friendly librarian.
Which would be yourself.
That's me.
It says the smallest library in the world, certainly in New Zealand, if not the world.
Where would the keys be located?
Well, the keys are located in my letterbox. I'm no good at 200 metres. Further down the road.
I mean, it does have a lovely intimate feel about it. And certainly when you've had the door open for a bit, it sort of dries and it seems to sort of come alive in a strange sort of way.
25.5 lovely degrees here in the Maniatoto. I have a couple of lovely ladies in the studio from Australia. They're actually touring around New Zealand, checking out small town libraries.
What do you see, Miyuki?
Waipiana Hamilton's Public Library, established 1870. So this is where it all began, hey?
It's been painted. It was more of a cream yellow colour when I was here. It still says library.
Nearly 20 years ago, I wandered around New Zealand and fell in love with the landscape and the feel of the country. So different from Midwestern America, where I grew up. This was about a year before The Lord of the Rings turned New Zealand into Middle Earth for most people. For 3 months, I bused, walked, and hitchhiked around the country, wearing a purple backpack half my size and volunteering on farms in exchange for room and board.
Bingo.
The trip was remarkable for many reasons, but I was especially struck by the libraries I found along the way. The simple, tiny libraries dotting the country from the tip of the North Island to the bottom of the South. Handsome, sturdy structures. These tiny libraries with their hand-painted signs and handwritten hours posted in the window. Some were open once a week, others once a month, some by request only. Some libraries were attached to halls or post offices, others stood independently, usually closed but ever-present, exerting a calm and a certain sense of patience, and always inviting further speculation.
Libraries, Tuesday 10:30 to 11:30.
Yes, on Sundays we are open from 10 o'clock to 11 o'clock.
2 o'clock till 4.
Between 2:30 and 3:30.
That's only for the 1 hour, but it does make everyone get here.
Nobody tunes up.
There aren't any hours. You can just come in any time.
I'd always wanted to go back to New Zealand and tell the stories of these libraries, but it was 18 years before I returned with my colleague, Miyuki Okiranta, and drove around the country, looking for tiny libraries and meeting their caretakers.
Puhoi. Kaipara Flats. Kau Kapa Kapa. Granity. Seddonville. Marawea. Naseby, Waipiata, Kaiburn, Patearoa.
New Zealand is stunning. We drove along winding rivers and craggy valleys, over dramatic mountain passes and across vast plains populated by sheep and cows and horses. We traveled under clouds in every shade of white. And besides coastlines and countryside set in the bluest blues, the deepest greens, dusty yellows, and rocky grays. We rolled along under night skies perforated by the brightest constellations. we looked for libraries everywhere.
My colleague Miyuki and I are here driving around New Zealand looking for tiny libraries.
And we found them. Some are thriving and some are hanging on by a thread. Most have a single person or small crew, usually women volunteers, who have devoted themselves to keeping these libraries open and functioning, some just barely, for years, often decades.
Hi, I'm Lynette Anderson. I live in Puhoi.
Desma Nicklin, living in Puhoi for over 50 years now.
My name is Mary Fitzgibbon, and I'm one of the volunteer ladies at Puhoi Library.
Library volunteer here. There are six of us volunteers.
The tiny libraries come in all shapes and colors, but they're all variations on the same size, not big.
Yes, it is kind of a garage size, isn't it?
It's not very big. Size of a bedroom.
The Marawea Community Library just occupies one corner.
Oh, it's lovely.
We got the library going. It used to be the old roads board office.
Temporary mortuary.
The first church that was built here.
Post shop to store the parcels. And
my name is Lorraine, and I'm just watching over the library right now.
Carol Sanders. I live in Marawea on the Inland Road.
The lady in charge died, and so I'm just filling in, hopefully till somebody else comes along.
My name is Carol Hood.
Frances Wood. We've been holiday owners of Paddy Rau for 50 years.
I'm Carol McKenzie, and I'm the librarian of the Kaibun Public Library, and I've been librarian for a few years.
Well, it's old. It's an old building. It's
sort of a concrete building, and it has a red iron roof.
It's corrugated iron outside.
And this back room here, it's pale lime green on the walls with white ceiling.
The floors are uneven.
A green carpet to match the
painted Pinex on the ceiling and the walls.
Which actually shows off these leather-bound books beautifully, really.
Bookshelves of varying heights.
White bookcases.
Books.
Ordinary publications, really.
Granity.
Weatherboard building with a gable roof on it and the small porch at the front. It's pretty much been this way since it was built. Oh, and the colour. And the colour is, it's kind of purple, I suppose, the top part, and the bottom's a light blue. What would you call that?
Periwinkle?
What do you? The bottom's periwinkle. Well, my name is Terry Barry. We're at the Granity Library. My wife and I have been part of the library since about 1988 and pretty much run it ourselves for the last 15 years, I guess. We'd have probably now, I don't know, not as many members as we used to have, maybe 35 or something like that members.
Are you the person that checks them out?
Oh, yes, we write that down, and everyone has a card, and we basically just put in the date and the reference number for the book, so usually don't have too many problems with it. The membership, it's $7 for a single person for the year or $10 for a family, so most people are just in here, that's the $10. It's owned by the community, basically, 350 people. Guess because of its size that people pitch in and get involved with each other. It has a real sense of community about the place, I think. I think just finding a library still operating in a small town like ourselves is, people find it quite surprising, really, because so many libraries have closed down all around the country now, and I think keeping it going to us is a very important thing. And as long as there's people out there reading, we're quite happy to be doing it.
The libraries are stocked with a mix of very old books and contemporary fiction. We found mysteries, romance novels, and westerns. We found reference books and how-to books. Danielle Steele, Janet Frame, Haruki Murakami. Special collections and donated collections. Hardbacks and paperbacks, decades of National Geographic, photographs and school records.
This is more of an older reference library of fuels, steam boilers and engines, hydro mechanics, mine pumps and drainage. There's one up here on modern power generators, but I think it probably looks like it's about 60 years old, so it probably won't be of much use now. But
it's
definitely an eclectic mixture of books.
It is amazing, encyclopedias, there's treasures of China, strange worlds, amazing places. And
Silent Night, Sanctuary, Original Sin.
Danielle Steele, Mixed Blessings. Danielle Steele again, The Long Road Home.
Great Mysteries of the World, Exploring the Secrets of Nature, Legal Question Answer Book, and Venice Civilizations.
Fuels, steam boilers and engines, winding haulage.
So you can see there's such a variety of books, and a lot of them were just very ordinary publications, really, but they were obviously, you know, people enjoyed reading them. Here's one, The Guests Arrive, and that's by Cecil Roberts.
Oh.
Devil's Drew.
I'm not sure what that is.
Hugh Pendexter.
And The Guardianship of God. So I guess it's something to do with God.
This is Descent of Man by Charles Darwin, 1888. This one. It's the second edition. And these ones are also Charles Darwin, Variation of Animals and Plants, 1875.
They came, it's building the community that is uniquely Marawea, and then this is written for our centenary, and then we've got a third one here, the Marawea Book, and that was written for the Jubilee in 1980. So these books are good books about our area.
Despite all their differences, what connects these tiny libraries is moxie, resourcefulness, determination. Clenda Walkner, head librarian of the Buller District in the northwest corner of the South Island, talked about how the libraries reflect a certain New Zealand quality.
I think it's that number eight wire mentality, where when we want something, we make it happen. And if we want a library in our community, we will make it happen. I think that's really what it comes down to.
What is the what kind of mentality?
Number eight wire. If something's broken, you can fix it with number eight wire.
That's the duct tape of
New Zealand, is number eight wire. Yeah. That's what it's about. It's about knowing what you want in your community and going out and getting it. And because a lot of our communities are small and quite isolated, if you want something, you have to do it for yourself. Yeah, we're not just about books anymore. We're about really connection between people and their communities.
Everywhere we went, the libraries tied back to a sense of holding together.
The library and the hall are all we've got left, and that's what's important to us.
In one town in particular, the library, or Athenaeum in this case, is especially grounded in community, and has been since its earliest days.
Naseby.
Okay, my name's Marilyn Swinburne, and we're sitting in Naseby, Maniototo, Central Otago, New Zealand.
Marilyn must know all 100 residents of Naseby and their reading habits. Besides running the town's general store and a sewing workshop, Marilyn is Naseby's postmistress and secretary and treasurer of the Naseby Athenaeum Trust.
Naseby was a commercial hub of Maniototo for a long time, but when the railway line went through Ranfurly, Naseby kind of shrunk. The building the Athenaeum's in was the first church that was built here. The building was gifted to the community as a library. They set up an endowment to maintain the library, a large block of farmland which is leased. The returns from that mean that we can keep operating. Without that, we would most likely, it would have disappeared. No council in their right mind would be maintaining a library for a town of 100 people. And we're very, very grateful to our forefathers who had that foresight to set that land aside and tie it up in a very watertight manner so that it can only be used for the library.
Oh, got some customers.
Yeah, I know all them.
I just came up from Ranfurly to have a walk around Naseby, and I was looking at the old library building, and I just noticed the reading room here and thought I'd catch up on the newspapers.
Wonderful.
Great idea. It's got here and it's peace and quiet. Because the library's in town, there's always people yapping and noise, where it's so quiet here.
It isn't too quiet when all the cribbies come out.
Oh, yeah.
They flock in and talk and we love it. Yeah.
The library is a little social centre. It's open 2 hours a week from 10:30 till 11:30 on Tuesday and Saturday mornings. Everybody knows that. It's been that way for a long time, so it's just an established part of the rhythm of life in Naseby. Even people who don't read will pop in and say hello to the librarian, and if they see a car they recognise, they'll stop and have a chat. It's definitely a little social focal point.
Good morning, Wally.
All right. I think the future of the Athenaeum is fairly well assured thanks to that endowment block of land. The same family's been involved in administration of it for about 60 years now, and there's two more generations coming along, so I'm sure they'll stay involved. I'm the secretary treasurer, and really anybody could pick up that job and do it.
Each tiny library has its own origin story, but collectively they recount the hardships and steadfastness of New Zealand's early days.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the early settlers here were gold miners and farmers, and a lot of them came from Scotland, from quite harsh environments, so they made the most of what they had here. They brought with them a number of social values which are still in place today here.
When Granite was first settled, it was basically by English, Scottish, Welsh and Irish people that mostly come here for the coal mining.
It might just be the history of the isolation, really, I think, of New Zealand. Originally, of course, the Bohemian people went on the river into the city, which was a massive undertaking 100 years ago. And so setting up these little buildings with community centres before they could afford a hall, they were very religious people, so before they had homes, they built the church. When they arrived here, there was nothing here. They were expecting, you know, sort of farmland, but they were met by the bush.
I was always fascinated with how many old books were donated by all the original run holders all those years ago, and the types of books that they read. Although it's such an isolated area, it was such an isolated area, their minds were free-ranging, wide interests, and they thought a lot further afield than just our valley. And people had to amuse themselves, that there was no power in the area till about 1952 or 3 or somewhere around there.
Well, people read so much more before television. You can see the list in the book of how many came and borrowed books, and, you know, people didn't travel. They just stayed at home.
What do you think it is about New Zealand that can have these tiny libraries, which I've never seen anywhere else?
Wow, pause for thought. Is it, you know, the world is moving on so fast, and because New Zealand is, for us English, is a fairly new country, to actually retain some historical heritage is very appealing, that it is of bygone days, and it's still as pertinent today.
In a town on the North Island, one tiny library has actually come back to life.
Kau Kapa Kapa.
When we first came in and started sorting it out, there was lots of boxes of books.
Boxes of books and things on the floors and cockroaches and you name it, we had it.
And what it looked like they'd done is taken all the really old books out, put them in boxes, and the shelves were full of paperbacks, and we reversed that. We put all the historic books back on the shelves and we got rid of the paperbacks.
Megan Patterson and Sarah Legg are the self-appointed keepers of the Kau Kapa Kapa Library and open the doors just once a month when the market is on in town.
I'm not a librarian. We just had an interest in opening it back for the public. Having this sitting here closed up, it just felt wrong. So we thought, well, really, if we only open it once a month, it's getting used, because otherwise we'll lose it. We did work out, I think it was 1996 was the last time it functioned as a lending library.
But there's a resource for people to come and look at, or if the school wants to come and do a project or something, it's sitting here. Maurice Henley started the library for the settlers in his home in 1865 and invited people into his home to read books that he'd bought from London, or, you know, and things that got sent to him. So, you know, he obviously felt it was important for the settlers at that time. People have been giving us the old books, and some of them have got local family names in the front of them, and there's a thing in the front from 1935 that says it's a certificate for good behaviour at Sunday school.
It is still a council building, but the books really are belonging to the community.
Oh, yes, well, I sort of appreciate what Sarah and Megan have been doing, and I've been there supporting them. I'm Ethel McLaughlin. I'm a farmer. My family In 4 years' time, we've been here 100 years in the district. The locals were adamant that they weren't going to get rid of this library, and that is the reason why it stayed here, because I do believe that the council or somebody wanted to shift it to museum down in Auckland.
There was a tender made some years ago from Motet, which is the museum in Auckland City. They wanted the building. You've got no focus then of the community, and there's no way that the community will learn about what happened in the past. It's nice to have your own history in your own community.
Puhoi. Kaipara Flats. Kau Kapa Kapa. Granity. Seddonville. Marawea. Naseby. Patearoa. Kyburn. Waipiata.
On the South Island, the last town we visited in the central Otago, was where I first fell for a tiny library back in 1998.
Welcome back.
Yes.
This was Waipiata, then and still, population 21.
I have to excuse it, I don't know what it's like. I haven't been in here.
The Waipiata Library sat a stone's throw from the Waipiata pub. The key to the library, behind the bar.
Well, it doesn't look so bad.
Well, maybe somebody gave it a sweep.
Well, I'll tell you, I remember coming in 1998, and that Hermann Hesse collection for me, I think I read a couple of Hermann Hesse books while I was staying down at Pete's.
Miyuki and I spent a few hours one afternoon with Heather Benson, who's been watching over the Waipiata Library since the early 1980s. We talked about the library's history and about Waipiata, and then Heather looked on, bemused, as I rooted through a cupboard stuffed to the gills with old school records and photo albums, and found the notebook I'd signed those books out in years ago.
What have you found?
No, you haven't.
Oh, yes. So you found it. Isn't that funny?
Yeah. That is very meaningful to me.
Don't throw anything out.
The unexpected find, a minor miracle it seemed, brought a certain lightness to the afternoon. But much of the conversation struck more melancholy, like when we asked, what does the library mean to Waipiata now?
I don't honestly think it means anything. No. When I'm no longer here, I wouldn't know who's going to take it on, if anybody. I don't know what'll happen there.
We wondered about this in every town. What is the future of these libraries?
Oh, yes, people will take it on once we retire. They do have a policy that the committee members have to be local. They have to be residents in the district and no outsiders. There's always somebody who will take the jobs on.
I think the fact it's kept going, as with a lot of these things, is always down to two or three or four people who have taken an interest and realised that there's something valuable here and it is worth doing all we can.
Yes, well, we're quite happy with what we're doing. And I suppose we'll stay here until somebody else is willing to step forward. Yes.
You don't know what's down the track, but, you know, hopefully there is still enough people interested in looking after these things.
It could be that in 50 years, if nobody's interested, none of this will exist. But I think there's enough interest and sentiment among people generally to want to look after these things. Let's hope it continues.
Libraries everywhere represent certain values and liberties. The freedom to read, the freedom to learn, the freedom to know things. And against all odds, the tiny libraries of New Zealand persevere. Each is a bridge linking the past to the now. Each is dependent on the devoted custodians who volunteer their days, record the meeting minutes, and refresh the books from time to time. And each is invaluable to those few but loyal borrowers who browse their shelves once a week, or once a month, or whenever they can find somebody with a key. Still, we wonder, will the libraries be here if we return in another 20 years? There's only one way to find out.
funny question.
A lot of people do around here.
I'm looking for your library that probably doesn't run anymore, but is it maybe a building I could take a look at?
Where's the library?
An extract from the minutes in 1913.
I was a small town country girl. I never realised that libraries were bigger. There were bigger libraries.
At a committee meeting in August 1902, it was resolved that authority be given to the librarian to eject unruly children from the reading room.
My husband thinks it would be a great man cave.
Now, Julie and your friend?
Miyuki.
Miyuki are going to be at the picnic in the park tomorrow. And if you see a couple of lovely ladies walking around with headphones on and microphones, don't be scared. They only want to know about the library.
The library's never going to move. We just hope it doesn't slide into the river.
Good morning, Wally.
How
are you? All right.
What's this lab?
No, these ladies are doing a study on libraries.
Libraries?
Libraries, little country libraries throughout the countryside. And there's plenty around here. Why? He's not a member. The definition of an Athenaeum, an institution for the promotion of literary or scientific learning, a library or reading room, comes from early Latin Greek.
It's like I always say, librarians don't know everything, but we sure know how to find it out. And you need to find out about number 8 why, don't you?
In 1952, Mrs. Elsie Hoffman was elected to the committee. She became Secretary-Treasurer 2 years later in 1954, a role she held until 1995, a remarkable 41-year stint.
Number 8 wire is a gauge of wire on the British Standard Wire gauge that has entered the cultural lexicon of New Zealand. It's used inventively and practically for applications other than fencing. It's used as a term that epitomises the Kiwi bloke as someone who can turn their hand to anything, most commonly found in the phrase number 8 wire mentality.
It still says library.
The Search for Tiny Libraries in New Zealand was produced by Julie Shapiro and Miyuki Yokiranta and commissioned originally by the BBC World Service. And a big thank you to the dozens of librarians and community members who helped support this piece. See pictures of the libraries mentioned in this program, including Granity Library's periwinkle walls, on our website, abc.net.au/rn/radiotonic. That's our program for this week. But before we go, an invitation for our Sydney listeners. Come share a drink and see and hear a radio feature performed live next Thursday. We'll premiere Johan Gabrielsson's Little Dragons, about the lasting impact an exclusive Swedish boarding school had on the lives of its students, including Johan himself.
We're dancing in a circle and shouting like young boys do.
A tale of friendship, pathos, drugs, remorse, and ping pong, with an original soundtrack performed live and on-the-spot sound effects. Thursday, August 27 at Lazy Bones in Marrickville. And it's free. Find out more on the Radiotonic homepage, where you'll also find a link to sign up to our weekly digest, CAU Happenings, free. Follow us on Twitter at @RN_CAU, free. And like us on Facebook as RN's Creative Audio Unit, also free. I'm Jesse Cox. Join me next time on the Radiotonic podcast.
Virtually all cultures have a local tradition of brewing their own beer. But today, most people don't drink their local beers. Over the past 200 years, German lager has come to dominate the world.
It was the product of moving goods, trade, and then the spread of power, if you will, of empire, and the association of beer with European power and modernity.
The globalization of beer. You can download or stream this Big Ideas from the RN homepage.